Welcome to Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon, a production of iHeartRadio. Sports fans, golf fans, or just fans, it is a loose episode 34. It's Tuesday morning. Hey, we didn't really know when we were going to record this. Max is on his first vacation without his golf clubs. You said on Twitter since you were a kiddo. I mean, when's the last non-golf club vacation?
I honestly don't remember. We used to go to Atlantic City and meet up with our family over there, and maybe then. But I mean, even I've tried to go on a couple vacations and thought, you know, might as well have them, you know, just in case. You never know when a big game's going to break out. So, yeah, it's been a long time.
Especially, I mean, if you're a golfer that's active on social media and you mention where you're at, that some golf course might reach out.
You never know.
You just never know. This is going to be a very heavy question and answer podcast. We don't have a lot to talk about in our own lives, so we're going to just answer your questions. We're not going to get to that yet, but I am going to start with a question here that's relevant to what we just talked about. This is from @bpardoning10, I think that's right. Said, Max, how many air swings did you take on your golfless vacation?
I had this one too. I'm at 4 right now. I was glad he asked. I made one in the airport or in the airport parking lot. My wife got mad at me on our way over here. And then every morning I'll probably take one in front of the mirror. And that, so that would have been 3. So probably one more for good measure. I'd say I'm at 4.
How do you feel like you're in a good, pretty good spot, pretty good position at the top?
It looks really good.
I figured. Always looks really good in the mirror. You know, that's one of those things like Cindy is not a golfer and has never been that interested in playing, will never understand the why are you swinging in front of a window or a mirror thing. And frankly, I don't really understand why I do it either. It's just something we do. We had the Tour Championship this weekend into Monday. I have a new thing on this podcast that if I'm going to, and I don't even want to say rip something, I want to at least present an idea to make it better. I feel like I'm not going to try to rip anything unless I have at least some sort of note to maybe improve the experience. And I got to be honest with you, Max, I didn't watch a whole bunch of golf this weekend, maybe 25, 30 minutes the entire weekend. Obviously, it looked like Destin was going to win the whole time. I've listened to a couple of podcasts that came out either Monday or Tuesday morning very early, and it seemed like a lot of people had the same thoughts I had about the Tour Championship. It just seemed a little lazy. It seemed kind of a little inevitable that Destin was going to win it. So I just want to go back to something, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this as a PGA Tour player. You know, we in TV, I guess I still include myself there, you know, there's this big fear of match play because you're so scared of who might end up in the championship. I always go back to the McCarron, you know, WGC, whatever it used to be called, and it was these two high-ranked guys made the championship match. Of course, ratings are probably going to be down when it's not superstar versus superstar. My thinking, though, is if you've got the 30 best players from that year or 32 or 16 or whatever number you want to get to, and you make that match play, the matchups you will inevitably get, John Rahm versus Dustin, Rory versus Tiger, Justin Thomas versus, you know, Colin Morikawa, I feel like those will make up for possibly, you know, a Brennan Todd versus, you know, I mean, throw in a guy that had a good season, a Scottie Scheffler that maybe isn't an A-list star. So I just want to hear your thoughts on why wouldn't match play work for this and why wouldn't match play make this more exciting?
Yeah, I think it would. So when we talk about, I'm glad you brought it up, because when we talk about you and I about match play, our first thing is, oh, I just don't want there to be kind of like a weaker, as far as celebrity name goes, not player, final, because that's worst case scenario. And I think that that's all been built up in our head because of how difficult us golf fans are. It kind of goes to this stroke play, this format that they use kind of goes to, in the grand scheme of things, the way the PGA Tour runs everything, in the sense that we have 50 tournaments coming up this year. We literally start the season in two days. Like, the season ended yesterday.
They had a commercial on Monday on the limited amount of time I watched golf, and it was about the new season. And I was dying laughing because I was thinking, could you imagine during the Super Bowl, they running an NFL ad about get ready for next year. You'd go,
yeah, like, get stoked.
We're at the third quarter. We don't even know who won this year.
So I feel like that, all of that, like that idea that that seems to be the, you know, kind of goal of the PGA Tour, which is all good with us, is built on give you as much excitement all the time, whatever, like contrive it, just keep pumping you with content. And that's great. So but the issue is to me, that this week, maybe this was worst case scenario, Dustin never looked like he didn't have a chance. You know, he looked like he was going to win pretty much Saturday on. I, like you, only watched really a little bit, but still, he just looked locked in and he's been playing the best and it never really felt like much of a sweat. So if it was match play, and let's say you did get the Mackenzie Hughes, Brendan Todd, the two guys, and no offense, but they would say the same thing. They're not Dustin and Rahm as far as celebrity goes. Well, if you got that 1 year, and then the next year you got Dustin versus Rahm, you'd be like, oh my God, what a final. And it would keep you so excited. And it just, it goes back to like football or basketball. Like if the finals this year are Clippers, Heat, I don't really care. Especially if it's Clippers, Celtics. It's two teams. I don't care. I'd be mad. But because we're so used to that in other sports, not contriving finals, I'd be like, oh, okay, you know, I'd probably watch it or whatever. But in golf, for some reason, I think because they just keep pumping you and trying to give you the A-list matchup every week and just keep giving you content and giving you content, they try and be like, okay, this one, we're going to give you, Dustin will find his way in the mix and we're going to keep him up at the top of the leaderboard. And that's all good and well. However, I just think maybe it's short-sighted to the idea that if this year wasn't A-list exciting, next year could be actually make you be more excited for the next year. But I feel like each year also be, just again, because the golf fans are kind of difficult or very difficult. Eat like this year, I'm reading about how pissed people are about it. And like last year, people were okay with it. It's just like, it's just, there's so much change and fluctuation in our opinions and how we like express them. So I'm with the match play. I think it'd be 10 times more exciting. But I'm guessing that's why they don't do it, but it's kind of how they approach the whole year.
Yeah, and just real quick, it was 0-2 when Kevin Sutherland was the 62-ranked player in the match play, and he beat Scott McCarron, who was the 64th-ranked player in the field, which is pretty wild that that was the case. Yeah, you know, I wrote down some notes about this, and I think that the problem with, and again, the problem being we're being critical. That's important here, because in a regular season, this being the weird season, right, where you've got the FedEx Cup playoffs, but you know the U.S. Open's in 2 weeks, and you know the Masters is in a month and a half, so you know this isn't the end all, right? This isn't the final time we get to see all the superstars at the same place on the same golf course, and I do feel like that's a big part of what the FedEx Cup does present, is it allows us one final time to see all these players together. Even a Ryder Cup, even a President's Cup, you know, you're missing some of the superstars. You know, President's Cup, you're not going to get Rory. You're not going to get John Rahm. Obviously, at a President's Cup or a Ryder Cup, you flip and you miss out on some of the international players like Hideki. So, you know, I do think typically on a regular season, this thing is important and it does have a place in the season. The issue being with the FedEx Cup and specifically the Tour Championship is it's never really had an identity. We've changed the format a few times. At one point, there were points. Nobody knew what they meant. There were, you know, you'd have like 3,500 points versus whatever. And it was confusing. And that's the issue is, one of the things that you don't want to do, it goes back to your charity event, Max, that you did that was awesome. It just had a confusing format in terms of points. And to me, that turns regular sports fans off, not golf fans. Golf fans can figure it out. You know, the No Laying Up boys play that Wolf Hammer game. I still don't understand the game. I will never understand the game. My IQ is not high enough to understand it. But I can be out there and in the moment, on the whole, at least ask somebody what's going on and have an idea of where I stand. You know, I feel like what this thing needs, what the Tour Championship needs, is its own identity. And to me, match play is that identity. You know, the PGA Championship was match play for a long, long time. And it was the lone major championship that used and leaned on that format. And that was what made it unique. And I feel like match play here makes us unique. You know, Max, the one thing, and I want to know if you agree or disagree with me on this, the difference in this event versus majors, in my opinion, as a viewer, as a fan, as somebody that consumes a decent amount of golf media, is this is the biggest gap in how important it is to you guys versus how important it is to us. You know, I mean, I can understand why you winning a U.S. Open would be impactful for your life. And I can understand why winning $15 million is important. But, you know, if you win a FedEx Cup, no matter how rich you are as a professional golfer, it is a huge hit. I mean, you are winning basically what equates to 15 titles, right? I mean, you're winning basically $1 million a title. So it's almost like winning 15 PGA Tour events in one event. It's just hard for us at home, I guess, to understand the impact outside of the money. So I just feel like the gap is huge. And to me, if you make it match play, you bring in a different format that's unique to this event. We only see it one other time a year. And it's this really small group of players that have played as good as anybody all season long. So you're going to get, you know, great matchups, no matter if the names are big or not. I mean, Brennan Todd has played some of the best golf of anybody on the PGA Tour over the last 6 months. It's like him being in this thing, he deserves to be there. And B, he could beat any of these guys because he's playing so well. It's let's not be so scared of the Q rating or, you know, how many sponsorship dollars are thrown at these players. And let's respect the fact that anybody that would get to this position has earned this position and gotten there because they played so well.
Yeah, I definitely think your first point about the biggest separation between what it means to us and to the fans, I definitely noticed this week because we've been talking about it a lot. And I've obviously shared my opinion that it is a really big deal. I think what's difficult for the fans is seeing an entire body of work in one event. Like, that's not how it works. We could see that as someone, or if I was there, I could personally see that, obviously. But for the fans, they don't care. They just want to see who wins the tournament, who wins the FedEx Cup. I think this is the simplest format you could give. Currently, I mean, you could just go all to even, but I do think this is the most fair, simple. But I just think that golf tries to be a little too fair. Match play is not fair. It's one round, and I can beat anyone in the world for one round. Anybody could probably beat me in one round. So, like, I'm cool with going to match play as long as we just start to decide, hey, we're not picking the most fair format. And this is something I've been thinking about all week, because I got a lot from our last podcast. I got a lot of people kind of messaged me about how I said that whoever wins the FedEx Cup should be the player of the year. And they said, well, what if somebody won all four majors? Shouldn't they be player of the year? Or what if somebody won every tournament? Shouldn't they be player of the year? And I think it's a great point, but I guess here's kind of my angle on that. The Patriots went 18-1. Do you think that they cared that they were the best team that year? Like, I don't think that they cared at all. They lost the Super Bowl. They will forever be the Super Bowl losing team. So I guess we look at our sport differently. I've never really cared much about a rookie of the year or a player of the year, because I would look at it as, hey, you know, if I won the FedEx Cup, I am the player of the year. Now, if somebody were to win, let's say, every tournament for a year, and then another player won every major for a year, like, who would you decide is the better player? Like, what? It's like a never ending game. It's unrealistic as well, but it's a never ending game. So yeah, I don't know. Like, we don't have we are trying to create the most fair format to give you the perfect winner at the end. I don't necessarily hate that for me, but for entertainment, I think it's stupid. Like, I think it should be much more, complex, wrong word, but have much more variance. I want to go into the final round thinking that the Giants could actually beat the Patriots.
Exactly.
Instead of thinking Dustin's up by five, like, he's already the best player in the world. I mean, we can't be giving the Patriots a 7-point lead to start the game. I mean, it just wouldn't be fair. But that's how we drive interest in a sport that clearly isn't as exciting as, or naturally exciting as, basketball or football. Like, we're in a sport that needs something. So we're, again, the officials, and here's to Tron's point that it's a player run tour. We of course want the best team to win. When I was on the national championship team that lost in the semis my senior year, we were a much better team than everyone there except maybe Alabama, but we were still better than Alabama. That's not debatable as far as record goes through the season. We lost to two teams for a whole year. So we lose to an Illinois team because it went to match play. It was a completely different format. And we lose to them, and, you know, our season's over, and we were, you know, complaining about how this isn't how we've played all year. Imagine March Madness going to, like, you know, 10-minute halves instead, or a 3-point contest. Like, it just wasn't the real, it was still golf, but it's way, way more exciting. So as a player, I was slighted because we should have won that, or at least had a much better chance. And of course, instead we don't. And we're complaining. But as far as the viewership, it was probably way more exciting because there's more variance. Like at that rate, that season, I know who was winning every tournament. It was us. Like that's just how it was going. This is better. This is Patriots, or that's better. That's Patriots Giants. That's things that can change. That's stuff you'll remember. But golf wants to give you the winner because we are a very fair, you know, sport. Like 71 will always be better than 72. And, you know, if someone's ranked number one in the world, we want them to keep playing great. I don't know. I can see both sides of it, but if it's an entertainment product at the end of the day, and we needed to make it more entertaining. So I'm all in with match play. I think that it should go. I think Andy or some said it, or Brendan, I think it should go top 125, keep your card. I don't think we should be playing all 125 in the playoffs. I think there should be one or two events that we chip down to whatever, like a 32 number or even less, maybe a 16 number, and then 16 final match play, you know, stack them and then see what happens. So I think that would be the most exciting way to do it. And we need more exciting because I'm going to give my favorite flight that I mentioned to you yesterday. I didn't get to tell you what it was yet. Best thing I heard this week. It's also the worst thing I heard this week for the sport. I'm in the airport. I'm watching the golf, one of like the 8 minutes I watched this week, and I'm standing there watching it, and somebody sits down at the bar and he goes, "Hey, can we change this to basketball?" And I heard the bartender say, "Oh, sorry, like, let me go check. Because if somebody asked for golf before this, we can't change it because they already requested it." And he gave the most like quizzical look. He goes, "But it's the playoffs. Like, what do you mean? Can't you put the basketball on?" And I almost said, "This is literally our Super Bowl." but nobody knows it. And that's okay. He shouldn't know it. You know, it's not his job to know it. But that's what's so funny and so difficult about being a golfer / golf fan versus other sports. Cause I was with him, put on the playoffs because this wasn't really keeping my attention, especially on whatever day we left, Saturday. So, Friday or Saturday. So yeah, it's just like, I don't know. You know, it's just it's a flawed system. I think in golf, to make it more exciting, we need to get kind of wonky and out there. And golf typically doesn't do that.
Yeah. So to me, okay, you make the point. You made the great point, which is one I like to bring up myself, is the Patriots Giants game, right? I mean, it's this, you know, the Patriots were playing to be the best team in the history of the NFL, and the Giants upset them, and they were Super Bowl champions. And if you go through history, and it really, I think, is more the one game. Because to me, stroke play feels like best, you know, 4 out of 7, right? I mean, the NBA, you typically don't get a surprise winner. You typically get the team that's supposed to win the championship, or either one of the two teams, right?
I mean, or once it's over, you decide they were the team that should have,
I mean,
you know?
You can make the Cavs argument, right? I mean, the Cavs upset the Warriors, but the Cavs have Kyrie and LeBron, and, you know, and their team was pretty, Kevin Love, their team was pretty good, right? I mean, it wasn't some, you know, Kevin Sutherland beating the Cavs, right? So, yeah. Or the Warriors. So I feel like match play is the best kind of comparison would be March Madness and the NFL playoffs, because it's always one game and one match, and anybody could win anything depending on what moment it is. We never complain about the NFL playoffs. We never complain about March Madness. It doesn't upset us that sometimes the team that was the best during the regular season didn't win the championship. It's like your golf team at Cal. I mean, you were the best collegiate team that year. You didn't win the final event of the year, the final event of the year being the most important event. And you'll always look back on that season going, you know, we had a great year, but. And that's kind of part of this. I mean, Dustin going up against Brendan Todd in the second round of the FedEx Cup match play finals and losing, it doesn't take away from what Dustin did before then, but he's not going to be the champion of this because he didn't win the match. And I mean, I just feel like, A, the PGA Tour would allow themselves this selling point daily, which is tomorrow, Dustin Rory, you know, 3 p.m., Dustin Rory. And then you'd be able to play up all these matches on social media. So you get to fill in that, because frankly, I don't know what you were selling for this thing over the weekend to make it exciting. The other thing, and I get in 2020, money is something they were trying to kind of, you know, keep at arm's length because it's a weird time. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just kind of a strange time in the world, and presenting $15 million or whatever is tough. But I feel like the money thing needs to be played up a lot in this.
Please. I mean, please show me each putt. Like, that's all I want.
But, you know, like in match play, every putt wouldn't be the issue. But sure, I want somebody out there, Max. You're on 18, one up lead. Okay. This is what I want, because this works. Game shows do this. I mean, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire was one of the most popular shows on television, and every step was more money. Nobody got afraid of the money, right? They weren't scared to talk about it. I want you with a one-up lead in the second round of the FedEx Cup match play event next year. I want you with the one-up lead on 18. I want a guy to come up there and announce it like Happy Gilmore and go, Max Homa, one-up lead here at 18. If he halves or wins this hole, he will advance on and will win $645,000 more. Like, that's something that people at home, now it's a lot of money, sure, but at least we can understand.
But right? I'll rebuke you just or tweak yours a little bit, because I'm all in on the last hole thing, but that becomes like on the edge of too like wonky, WWE. Maybe. But at the best part, I think, to your point about match play, is
the announcers can do it.
But at the beginning of that day, the players would already know. So announce, you know, because each stage of the match is going to add money. If you play WGC, you would know that if you were in the quarters versus semis, you're going to make. So basically, it'll be like, hey, it's Saturday. Dustin and Justin Thomas are playing against each other for a spot into the semifinals and $600,000. And now it all of a sudden becomes the biggest match, you know, they've probably ever played. I doubt they've gambled for that much. So you now you have a huge money game, and then it becomes so interesting. I actually like that more, because then the whole narrative for the whole day is, yes, you can get to the next stage and have another opportunity, but also this literally is worth 600 grand. You better step up. And then it would excite the fans, because now we're watching. I you know, you get the thing a lot. You've read it a million times as well. I'd like to see a match for $1 million between two mini tour players or two no names versus Tiger Phil, because we don't care if they make another $1 million, whatever. Like, we get that a lot. Well, I don't care who you are. I still think you would be pretty stoked to watch Justin and DJ play for 600 grand. Cause that's not typical. Like, that is, no one does that very often. It becomes a big, because if I play Justin for $100 a nine or whatever, we would be pretty into it. You know, now we're right at $600,000. Like, that's a big number.
Yeah. My only point on the kind of, I know that it's kind of bordering on wonky, and it's bordering a little bit on like WWE type of stuff. But my only point with the announcement is, in that world, everybody knows, they know, like, you would know on the first tee what you're playing for and maybe how much money you're playing for. But maybe at times you're in the round, you're in the match, you kind of get lost in it. I feel like bringing that back, and that maybe it's on the announcers. Maybe it's not on, you know, somebody on the tee.
So like you're saying just the announcers like remind, like,
well, just, you know, just it's, again, it's like, why are we scared of talking about the money when the money is the thing we talk about all year long? It's $15 million. It's so much money. It's $15 million. It's like, that's something, again, that if you're at home watching and you go, man, this is a pretty big match between Dustin and JT.
Yeah.
And then somebody goes, and also Dustin's one up with one to go. If he can tie this hole, he wins another $1.2 million. You'd be like, holy shit, this is a big deal.
Totally. I mean,
So that's all I'm saying. The last point I want to make, and this was actually, I want to shout out the Shotgun Start guys, because Annie mentioned this, and it's such a great point. So now the FedEx Cup, end of season FedEx Cup number is, we're basically where you finished at the tour championship.
Yeah.
So that's where you stand. I think we need to freeze at the end of the Wyndham. I think we need to freeze your standing, and that's where you sit for that year in terms of how your year went. Because, you know, the playoffs, you can't play an event, you get knocked out. Obviously, those numbers go up. You know, we don't do MVP voting when it goes to the playoffs. We don't do all NBA voting when it goes to the playoffs. Same thing for the NFL. Like, all that stuff's regular season. I feel like guys that finished seventh on the FedEx Cup list going into the playoffs deserve that seventh number for the year, because, you know, people forget that historically you look back on this stuff. You know, you look back on how did Max Homa do in 2020, and if I look and you're now, you know, 69th on the FedEx Cup rankings, I don't know if it totally does your year justice. You know,
well, I think everyone's totally different, because I've never once considered the end of the year FedEx ranking as a good year. I've looked at it as top 10s, top 25s, and wins. So I think maybe it's just different for us, because historically, to me, I've never considered that. I thought of winning it and then not winning it. So I'm with that. I listened to that podcast they did, and you know, they were talking about, you know, Brendan Todd didn't have the 20th best season this season, but it's like, yeah, but like neither did whoever George Mason beat in the playoffs or in the March Madness, you know, right, a few years ago. But it's like, why do we care? They didn't win it. Like, so it's all, I get it. I'm not saying that one's right and one's wrong. I'm saying my opinion is, I don't care that And I don't even know. I mean, he does financially, but Brendan Todd probably doesn't care that he has, quote unquote, the 20th best season this year, because he knows that he had one of the 5-6 best seasons. So I don't know. I get it for his, but for me, historically, I've never even considered a FedEx season as like a final, like something to look back on and kind of brag about for a player. You know, oh, you know, Tiger was player. You know, I don't know. It's just not been a big thing.
I think just when you're, again, like when you're diving, like personally, when I dive back into like a 1990s golfer to look at his year, you know, you will look at money list ranking, you know, obviously before the FedEx Cup, because that was a good tell of how well he played, right? I mean, the money list kind of defined how his season went. Now you could dive into it and look at wins. You know, we look at top 10s.
You could still do money list, couldn't you, right now? I mean, you don't
you
have
could,
to
but
FedEx
it's like, lists. But you got to dive. It's harder to find Aon risk reward rankings.
Yeah, they have the worst website
season.
On the planet.
It was impossible to find now. They don't want that. They want it to be the FedEx Cup. And, yeah. And again, this is, I want to really stress this point. I appreciate the PGA Tour spending the last 12, 14 years, whatever it's been, leaning on an idea to finish their season off, because they never had anything like this. I mean, it was like the majors ended and then you knew the tour championship was kind of lurking, but you didn't really know when it was and where it was played or all that stuff. I do appreciate them trying. I appreciate them getting the sponsor. And I feel like they have a chance here at something. It just we haven't gotten to that point yet. Yeah. And the problem is, Max, is it's all dependent on who plays well. When Tiger wins it and they're walking up 18 and Rory's there and they've got this throng of people and it's crazy and it looks like this unbelievable scene, that's a great year and this one wasn't. And I feel like that's not what you want. You don't want the person and the situation to define how great the championship was. And I feel like that's what we have right now. And if you tweak a little bit of the format and just make it unique, maybe we get every year you get something exciting. If it's not the championship match, maybe it's four unbelievable quarterfinal matches, or it's these two great semifinal matches that you get and you want to watch it and golf fans are into it and people click over because it's Rory versus Tiger and maybe they don't watch the final. Who knows? But at least they were interested and really into something. And I think that's what we need. We also just spent 26 minutes on that when I didn't really think we would.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back.
I wanted to get to some questions, and I got a lot of these. I'm sure you did as well. I got a lot of questions about your schedule for this year. Aaron McAvee said, with the new year having 50 tournaments, 6 majors, how will you go about setting up your schedule? Have you started that process yet? Is that something you're already kind of tweaking as you're kind of sitting there drinking your Pinots?
I haven't even really looked at the spring schedule. I obviously looked at the fall. It's kind of in flux a little bit just because the CJ Cup and the Zozo, I forgot that I'm not like guaranteed to get in. I think I'll get in, but I'm not sure. So that would drastically change things considering, you know, for instance, I'm going to play the US Open. Then I'm going to have a week or 2 weeks off, and then I'll have the Shriners in Vegas. And then if I did get into the other two, I would go, you know, back to back to back to those three. Then I'd have a week off, and then the Masters, I think, would be how that would go. So if I didn't get into the CJ Cup and the Zozo, then I'd have 3 weeks off for the Masters, which I'm not doing. So then I would play Houston, which is the week before the Masters. So try and, you know, not go into to Augusta, kind of not rusty, but basically like antsy. I'll probably be done after that for the most part. Still haven't decided on Mexico, but you know, I look at it basically how I can. I hate the term peaking at the right time because I don't buy that. I more look at it as making sure that I'm maintaining the peak as like at the right point. So like, for instance, when I play 5 in a row, typically I don't, I'm not in a great headspace. I can do it on the West Coast because I'm basically home with my friends in between each week. So it doesn't feel like as much of a grind. But like in this one, you know, 3 weeks in a row, that's usually, you know, easy and normal. And it's even better because it'll be, although I may die in Vegas for 2 weeks in a row, but it's Vegas and then California. It's very easy travel, easy trips. And yeah, then like, you know, I do want to be as fresh and prepared as possible for the Masters. And one of those things for me is not having 3 weeks off before that. I don't think that would be a smart idea. So that's kind of how it goes. But it would be nice if I knew I was in everything. Since I don't, it's still in a little bit of flux, but I guess gotcha. I'll know as we get closer. So that would kind of be the best answer for that, I guess.
Hey, what's the drive on during the Vegas event? Driving range Tuesday, Wednesday morning. Is it pretty easy? Is it pretty easy to tell who has Vegased it up the night before and who maybe actually went to bed at 9:30?
It's honestly a lot harder than I thought. You know, I thought I'd see more chaos. I kind of wish I was, you know, played in the 90s because I feel like you would have been seeing a lot more things. I'd be lying if I said we've never felt like that one of the days of the week. It was one of my favorite me and Joe stories. You know, Lacey was there. She had to leave Sunday morning. It was our rookie year. So it's literally my second ever PGA Tour event. It's Sunday, you know, or it's Saturday night. All my friends had been there and they'd been going out every night. I finally decided, hey, I might, you know, try this, see how it goes. I mean, I didn't have status. I literally had to shoot like 55 to get top 10 to, you know, work my way into the next fall or in the following week. And I was leaving for Q school the next day anyways. So I was like, oh, I'll drink whatever. And I wake up, don't feel very good. Joe was, he felt horrible. We go out there. All my friends are supposed to come with us. They don't make it. Me and Joe get there on the range. He's not cleaning my clubs. He's not doing anything. He's sitting on the water cooler doing like, you know, the foamy spit thing where you could just tell someone's got no water.
You can't drink enough water. Yeah. You can't chug enough water.
He looked horrible. We go out and play and I'm 2 over through 8 and I'm in a foul mood because I'm pissed that first off, I'm, you know, I feel like crap. And second off, you know, I am just annoyed that I did this and you know, I'm playing bad, whatever. Well, all of a sudden I get to 9s of par 5 and I hit it to like a foot and make eagle. All my friends show up on that green. They cheer. They've seen, you know, one hole and it's an eagle. Then we get to 10 and I hit it in the fairway and made a 9 iron for another eagle. So I did your American back-to-back eagles. I shoot 6 under in the last 10, sneak my way, shoot 4 under for the day, sneak my way into 30th and realize, holy cow, you make a lot of money for 30th, Max. Maybe you should be sober or at least not hungover for these rounds. Taught me a nice lesson, but that was the one time we've let Vegas get us. I'm sure other people have too, but I probably looked okay. Joe looked like, you know, he had gone out. So he to your question, rough. I haven't seen much of it, but Joe, that morning, Joe would have been the guy. I'd be like, yeah, that guy, he did something last
night. Well, I mean, listen, these are dead giveaways. You're sitting on the cooler. You got your your knees on your elbows are on your knees and you're done. I mean, that's a pretty, I mean, I guarantee you I have seen a couple of people like that on the range at the Waste Management as well, especially if Thursday didn't go well. Do you have a question?
Yeah,
you
have a question, I actually have a question for you from me. So just imagine I tweeted it.
By the way, I've got a question for you from me as well. I'll do that next.
This question, you know, I've seen a lot, and I think these types of questions are typically dumb because, you know, it's like, you know, when someone's on a par three and they're like, oh, it's 150, I'm hitting 9 iron. What would you hit and what would you make? It's always like, it's so stupid. Yeah. But this one, I do feel like kind of is a telling answer. And I like the premise of it. So if you made $15 million, you won the fight, so you won $15 million. What is not just what's the first thing you're going to buy? Cause if I was you, you know, I'd put some way, obviously you're going to be responsible. What's your first irresponsible purchase? What would you be getting? The one thing that sits out, like, that's not like a something for Henry's future. Like I want something you're going to splurge on.
You know, I have been kind of talking about buying a truck with Cindy for probably the better part of 4 years. You know, I grew up in East Texas. I had this truck. We called it the Teal Mac. It was a teal, you know, step side Chevy 1593. Not a great truck, but I loved the truck. Having a truck personally is awesome. You know, if you don't need to move people all the time, which inevitably happens if you have a truck, just being able to throw stuff in the back is really the joy only truck owners know. So it would be, I would go buy just some awesome Dodge truck. Unless another car company wants to sponsor this podcast, then I would buy your truck.
You have $15 million. You don't even need a podcast.
That's a great point. I wouldn't stop doing the podcast. Come on.
But you don't need a sponsor for the podcast. You, wait,
are you the guy that wins the Masters and drops all your friends? No.
We'll see.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Oh, wow. Max changed his number again. It's weird. The connection won't work. We try to do the podcast. I would go buy a just a badass dude. You know, trucks, like you can buy a truck now and nearly spend like $100,000.
Oh, the Raptor's like 120 if you do it all in.
Wow, you already know. Look at you.
Yeah,
no wonder you've been. I know what you've been doing in Napa instead of doing swings in the mirror. Even looking up trucks. What would you? What would be your? Because I asked you this, I think, on the clubhouse when you won the Wells Fargo. You know, you have any big purchases ahead? And you're like, nah, man, I got nothing. Would you, do you have anything? You would just, if you won 15 million, is a little different than 1 million. It's almost 15 times.
It's almost 15 times. I would. I've always been talking about this. I would take, and we joke about this. It kind of fits into our podcast theme. I would take all my friends' private jet up to Bandon for like a weekend and then come back. I think that would be fun. I've always wanted to do that. I got a bunch of buddies that want to go. It's obviously quite difficult to get there. I don't love traveling. So I didn't really, I've never, the big turnoff to going there for me is going airport to airport to long drive. If I could just fly right in there, I would probably go. It's just expensive. So I'd take, you know, a couple groups of people up. One weekend, and I think that'd be really fun.
I mean, let's win the FedEx Cup. I would like to go to Bandon
Dunes
and
do that.
That sounds fun. Do you want me to ask you my question?
Yeah, go for it.
I was thinking about this the other day. I had this situation possibly come up, and I was wondering, do professional golfers ever do the hit a putt on the practice green so bad it goes close to another hole, so you just act like that was the hole you're going for in the first place and hit your next ball of that hole strategy?
Almost all the time.
You still do it.
Yeah, especially when, you know, you first show up to the course and you haven't been on the grounds yet. And like the greens are way faster than you think. And you just whack the first one like, wow, okay, I'm just going to. Yeah.
Just
okay,
go to that one.
Yeah. Oh, I misread it a little bit.
It's really one of my favorite things to
that's
do
a good
tournament
question.
Is when you have a 30. You're putting to the hole that's 15 feet away. You hit it to the hole that's 30 feet away and you're like, I'll just hit this one at that one.
Yeah,
well.
Why not?
Makes you look
don't
like a really good
professional. Yeah,
that's my
exactly.
question for you. I was thinking about
that's
that.
That's a great question.
At 68 Golf,
almost.
68 Club, said, were Ross and Rachel on a break?
I mean, they were absolutely not on a break. Anyone who's ever dated anyone knows you'd be pissed if he did that to you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, break or no break, we're using a word and just like making that the driving, you know, force in this topic, but like, that's not the point. Like the intent was wrong. He was
not
wrong.
On a break.
Not on a break.
The weirdest thing about Friends when you watch it now, besides, you know, every show that has a laugh track just stands
thank
out.
Thank you. Lacey has just ruined it friends for me.
The laugh track is just terrible.
But it's
my
such
thing on sports
show.
Night. It's just these shows outside of Seinfeld, which still has moments, but outside of those shows that are like the Larry David thinking, you know, 10 years ahead, most of the time, there's just so many things that are just cringeworthy now when you watch Friends. And also, the Friends never drank. They're like 20 years old, live in New York City.
They each had one blowout.
They get either blacked out Vegas or they don't have any drinks. That's the only option. They are pickup fajitas with no gloves, drunk, or they are having coffee. It doesn't make any sense, but that is an argument for another. Do you have a question?
I do. Morbid Rooster asks, can you
explain? Wait, say it again one more time?
Morbid Rooster.
I like that. Already winner of the
name. I'm surprised it wasn't taken. Can you explain your thought process and club selection in a fairway bunker? And I thought this was a good question just because this is probably one of the more
it's a great
unknown
question.
parts of golf. Basically, most people like to choke up in the fairway bunker just because you don't want to fat it. So you make the club a little bit shorter. So you typically then need to, obviously then need to take more club because it's going to go shorter if you choke up. So I think that's your first main thought. Second, the ball needs to get over the lip. Fact. Just so I guess maybe that's your first one. What club gets over the lip? And then can I get enough club on that to get it to the green? And then, like I said, you're going to choke up. So you need to factor in that part. And then third, it's lie. So there's going to be lies where you're going to have to get steep and chop it. And that's not going to go as far. There's going to be lies where you actually may be able to hook it, to be more shallow. And it actually might go the normal distance to further. So you're kind of playing the lie game. But I would say it goes thought process would be lip. You know, which club can I take now that I'm going to choke up? And then is the lie going to be good or bad enough to where I'm going to have to manipulate something and then really change the club? So obviously all club selection forever will be your own personal journey, but that's where you got to, that's the process, I think, for the most part.
Yeah. You know, getting over the lip thing, that is, you and I have had this conversation before about the branch in front of you. And you're like, yeah, I think it's just a punch little nine iron. And then you hit the branch. You're like, yeah. No. That was the first thing I should have thought about.
That's all that matters.
That is the thing in golf that makes me the most frustrated. Just when I'm trying to punch something up by a green and I hit the tree that I'm trying to hit it under. You're like, oh, just anything else would have been better.
Yeah, exactly. Same with, we talked about Gupta at the USAM. Just get the dang thing over the lip. That's all we're doing right now. Like that's point one, two, and three.
Alex,
do you have a question?
Yeah, Alex Hugo asked to Max, how good is Mookie Betts at baseball? How happy are you that he's a Dodger? And also, how awesome is this team? And why is the answer the most awesome ever?
Most awesome ever. Well, Mookie is better than I could have imagined. You get nervous with these big trades these days because a lot of the guys kind of lay an egg their first year. What was good is we're going to have 11 more years. So we had a long time for him to find his groove. He seems to already have found it. It's really, really fun to watch. It doesn't hurt that Kershaw has a 1.5 ERA. That would make the team the most awesome. But this has been cool. I'm already waiting for the Astros crowd once the Dodgers do happen to win the hopefully win the World Series, but hopefully we have Mookie for 11 more years, so maybe we'll win a few more after that, so we'll be all good.
What's your power ranking of teams, including Cal? Like, what is your power ranking of teams that you would most want to win their respective championship?
I've known more about basketball most of my life. I've learned quite a bit about baseball the last few years. So I love baseball. It's like, and the Dodgers would be the number one. But I mean, a big reason the Dodgers would be my number one is because I've never seen them win a World Series. Okay. I mean, it was 88 last time they did it. I wasn't born then. And even if I had been, it would be such a long gap in between that that's what I kind of like crave wanting to see. The Lakers, I have seen five of them. Not saying that's, I would still love to see one, but I don't feel like the heartache and the heartbreak I felt.
The thirst isn't there.
The Dodgers have hurt me in like the last 7 years. I mean, like legitimately hurt me. I've stayed up watching games and then lost at the end. I've just seen it all as any sports fan has, but just, it feels like in this compressed time where I need one, I'm getting tired of people telling, my team's a choke. Cause they haven't been like completely wrong. So I want it to go away. So that's how I would look at Cal. Cal is so many sports. I love college sports. My football team and basketball team is just such like a run of the mill team. We have great players and I'll root for them, as they play, but it's quite difficult to get behind. If we were to have maybe a standout year, I would of course go nuts, but they just are so on the back burner. We have the best shirt in college sports, I think, because our football shirt just says Cal football. We're going to be so good next year because that's all we can say. So it's just hard to root. It's just difficult. So, it would be right now. It'd be Dodgers, Lakers, and then anything okay. Cal.
Do you have a question?
Yeah, I have a question. I wanted to ask you this one too. This doesn't need to be tournament round, but I'll answer quickly, but I'm curious your answer. This is from Joe Klein. Quickest you've ever hit the bar after a tournament round? I have one specific one. It was my birthday. I was playing Pebble Beach in a tournament, not the AT&T. I was leading at one point on the back and then probably finished 10th. I tripled 18. I did everything wrong in the world. And I walked straight into the bar. All my friends were waiting. It was my birthday. It was like a sad birthday. And I walked in, a shot was there and I like drank it. Like I drank as fast as I could have, as far as like, unless somebody brought it to me while I was on 18 green. So what's the quickest you've gone after a big day?
I don't think I've done the direct to the bar at the golf course, because that typically means I played poorly and I want to get the hell away from the golf course. But I think it might have been the bar you and I have been to at Wigwam. Literally across the street is this unbelievable Mexican spot in Phoenix at this course called Wigwam. And I've ducked in there after a couple of tournament rounds before and
it's nice and dark in there too.
Really dark. That's what I need. You need dark. Brunch. You need a corner. And you need minimal communication after a bad round, right? I mean, you don't want to talk to anybody.
No.
Do you do that? Are you the, if you have like a bad Sunday round, do you cut off?
Yeah. Everyone, I call it going on my island, and I wish I didn't do it, but I just do it.
Everybody does it though. It's a golf thing. That's like a block away from the parking lot. I mean, you don't even have to drive there.
That's the perfect. I would say the other answer that most people would have is, you're on like the 11th hole and you're already planning like, guys, like where are we going after this? Like I need a beer or something. Okay. Here's a question for you. I thought this was a good one. This is from Derek Kwan Ao. What's your favorite golf course that you have yet to play? So I think this is a good question for someone like you, who's a big golf fan, who you've seen a ton of golf courses that you probably haven't played. My answer is Firestone. Seen it on TV a million times. Tiger dominated it. I don't know anything about it, except it looks like I'd like it. So do you have one of those that you've seen a bunch? You just don't, you think it would be your favorite?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to throw, just in terms of seeing a golf course a lot and not playing it, I mean, I loved Trinity Forest and what it was going to be. I know that they never quite got the weather they hoped to get there for that event, but I would watch it and I really wanted to play it and I never got a chance to play it. So I would probably put that up there very high. You know, there's a lot of the, you know, Crystal Downs, places like that, but you don't see them on TV. You don't know much about them in terms of how the actual golf course is played unless you, you know, dive online into architecture.com or something. So I would say Trinity Forest is really high up there for me, because it, you know, I was hoping that the pros would embrace it a little bit more, and they just never quite got what they were hoping for.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back.
I had a great question here, Max. A great question from Jonathan Evans.
Are you trying to say my questions have been great? Are you looking down upon followers?
I'm going to say they've all been great, and this one continues in the theme. Jonathan Evans, chunk_WV. Do you think he went to West Virginia? He said, why don't we develop a minor league Ryder Cup? Off your guys that miss out on a Ryder Cup, you know, President's Cup, play top 12 KFT guys. I don't know if I'm going to go with the KFT part of this, but I do love, sorry, I don't want to do the, you know, the PGA Tour players versus KFT. I do love the idea of 12 KFT players going at, you know, like a European tour or a challenge tour type of situation where they battle it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I saw this question too. The idea is there. You very much underestimate that when a pro has a week off, they don't want to go play
and they don't make money.
Yeah. And it's one thing if you're playing for literally your country, and this is a huge deal, but it wouldn't be if the KFT had maybe a bigger international draw or big enough, they could do that. Cause I think it would be weird if you did the top 12 KFT versus the top 12, let's say, challenge tour, but six of the KFT were European. That would be odd. But I like the idea, but yeah, it wouldn't happen.
But you could pay. I mean, you could come up with again, PGA Tour money. We talked about $15 million to start.
Yeah, you are going
to
get a PGA Tour.
Yeah, but I'm saying if you were talking to KFT players and everybody got $150,000 to play in it, everybody did across the board, I'm pretty sure everybody would say yes.
KFT, yeah, because a win on KFT is 100. So you're probably going to be, realistically, everyone would get 20 grand. And it would draw. I just don't think that you would get a sponsor draw for that. I love the idea. Like the premise is like the purest premise, but it's just, I think like realistically, it wouldn't work because you would need the second to have the draw. You would need the second tier of PGA Tour player or European Tour player. You're not going to get it because they're going to say, you don't have enough money to take another week away from my schedule. Plus, if you did pay, then the Ryder Cup people would be like, well, why aren't you paying us?
Yeah.
It becomes like a slippery slope. But it would be fun as hell for us to watch. I just don't know who would do it. And there wouldn't be enough money to get people to do it. Or the KFT, I think, would just be a hard draw for a sponsor to be like, here's your second tier. I know these guys aren't ever even on TV enough anyways. I don't know. It'd be hard because I think the Ryder Cup, as Rory said it best this year, it's mostly the fan stuff and how like incredibly exciting it is because of how rowdy it is. And you're not going to get a huge fan draw, I don't think, to what we're kind of asking for.
Yeah, this just real quick, just a reminder that the President's Cup should be a mixed male-female event. Just one more time. I just wanted to put that out there. Just has to be. Just let's change that tomorrow if we can. Do you have a question?
Yeah, somebody asked what was my favorite college event I played outside of the national championship. Easy answer, the Owlworth one, because we got a lot of swag.
Nice.
We got like Under Armour shirts and all kinds of like goodies for them. We got all this stuff. That's if you ever ask anybody at college what their favorite event was, I guarantee you their answer had a lot to do with whether they won it or if they got stuff.
Remember the AJGA stuff you'd get at the big events?
Oh, yeah.
I got a Gus Buster one time at the Lucent Technologies, thought it was the best thing ever. I think I had that thing through college. You know, the AJGA towels were important, but some of the events would get
logo
shoes.
Logo golf ball was the best.
Eddie Bell, for a couple of people that travel a decent amount, thought it was a great question. Eddie said, what's the optimal hotel room location, top floor, bottom floor, near the stairs, easy exit. What are you? Are you, first of all, do you specify when you check in, or are you just kind of give me whatever room you've got?
It's a give me whatever. I like, you need to be perfectly between the stairs and the elevator. You need to be far enough from the elevator not to hear the ding noise.
Right.
You don't want to be too far where you are now forced to be an athlete and go down the stairs with your golf bag. So I'm like a middle of the road. Let me be close enough to the elevator, but not too close. What I don't care about floor. I mean, I always feel like a baller if you're really high up, but it's not really like true.
Same. I'm not a, I don't care what floor, but I don't want to be by the elevator.
Okay.
I actually prefer to be as far from the elevator as possible. The only room you don't want that's as far from the elevator as possible is the one right next to the stairs. Because anybody that goes out there, the door slams. They never think to let it shut quietly. But get me away from the elevator. I don't want to be by it. I don't want to have that foot traffic, the noises, anything like that.
Get a grip on not elevator fans. This is good.
This is also an old thing. You know, when you never, ever, ever thought about your hotel room location for probably 30 years of your life, I'd say, right around there. And all of a sudden, you become a hotel snob. I don't know what the deal is. But definitely, of all of the pretentious stuff in my life, my hotel choices, interests, what I want in a hotel room, what I need have all gone up.
What do you need? What do you need?
I don't want queens anymore. I used to go, I've got two queens. I put my stuff on one and then I sleep on the other.
I love that.
See, I want the king. I want the full bed.
I love the stuff on the other bed.
The ironic part about this is I sleep in a king bed the exact same way I sleep at home.
Yeah, that's
exactly. I don't touch one half of it, but I love the idea of the option if I want to kind of go horizontal. You know,
all right.
If my feet want to go over into quote unquote Cindy's area, it can. And I know I'm not going to get yelled at. You know, I'm not going to be in Harlow's area in the middle of the bed. I got the whole bed to myself. I need it to be cold. I need it to be dark. I don't need it to be wine cool like the bubble where these guys are having their room at 55 degrees, which is just unbelievable. Crazy. Hey, by the way, you're in Napa. How cool are Napa rooms? I mean, do they keep them wine temp?
No, we are finally having a nice cool day. I will say that this hotel we're in has like, it's very modern. So it has, it feels very concrete-y and it's nice and cold. Whereas when we got here, you know, you get like at our house in Arizona, we have carpet in a few of the rooms, and those rooms feel like insanely warmer than the other room. So it's nice. This has a cold room vibe. Very, very welcome.
Do you have any things you tick off for your rooms? Like, what do you do? What are your musts with a hotel room?
Don't have any. Water pressure, I would appreciate, but I don't have it. If I had to start with a priority ranking of things that I would love, it would be, the water pressure in the shower, it needs to be good, especially in the summer when I'm playing in like what feels like 200 degree heat. I want to come home and enjoy the shower and not feel like I have to like grind out the shower.
Are you offended when you check into the rooms that have the two Fijis on the office desk for then they have the price tag? It's like $13 a bottle.
I honestly love it because it just starts my week off with a little bit of a challenge. And if I overcome that challenge, then I can just keep, grinding towards a win during the week.
This is like dodgeball with the donut and the electricity.
Exactly.
Your hands.
Yeah,
like I just shocked me. Let's go. All right. So I got the hotel room. I had a great question for Patrick Koenig, our buddy who just travels the world and plays golf. He said, is there a circumstance on a golf course where it would be permissible to body slam a fellow golfer?
I mean, we could loosely use the word permissible. There'd be a time you're allowed to. I've said this before. I don't think it's in golfers' best interest to fight because I feel like it just makes us look even less athletic than we are. So I'm going to stick with there's not a good situation for that. But I mean, I've seen a video of two brothers going at it on the course. And I mean, I feel like I would be tempted to do that if I had a sibling who was pissing me off for like, 16 years and outdrove me and told me about it. Like maybe I'd put him in his place a little bit. I don't know.
So you bring up such a great point. It like fighting is this thing that people talk about a lot. And it's brought up in things like this, where you bring up this idea of people getting in a fight on a golf course. You know, fighting is something that most people either never do or have done a couple of times in their entire life. So we all think we'd be good at it or we'd be okay at it or we'd know what to do. None of us would know what to do. We wouldn't know where to put our hands. We wouldn't know the right approach. You don't know to jab, to uppercut, any of those things. I feel like almost every non-professional fight, just ends up with the people on the ground in about 3 seconds.
So my dad boxed in college, and he taught me how to box growing up. So I will say that one of the things I've always held, you know, hung my hat on it, and knowing that I'm not maybe the biggest guy ever in a bar, but I, and especially golf, I feel a little better because I am a little bit bigger than the average golfer, but I always felt like I think muscle memory would kick back in a little bit because I do know how to do all those things. Now in my head, I'm probably a lot better than I, you know, think, or than I actually am, but it does feel good to know that you get the guy, when we used to box like against like, you know, when we were kids, you get the guy who runs at you and his arms are just, you know, he does like the big wind up and you're like, if you had my dad, you'd be like, hey, you see that guy's shoulder go back? This is the time where you just hit punch him a little bit face, on the right. nose. Like, yeah. This is easy. So I always think in my head in the fantasy land that all guys have had that, oh, if some guy ever comes up to me, I'm going to kick his ass. You know, like every guy's had that. Oh, somebody breaks into my house right now, I kick his ass, it'd be easy. Like that's how every guy's always been. I do feel like I have a slight like lead. However, if anybody says, oh, I like also learned, I'd be like, oh shit.
Oh, but how many,
this is not good.
How many months were you doing it? How far did you make it? How old were you when you stopped? Yeah, no, it is just, again, like the majority of human beings, once they get over the age of about 14 or 15, aren't getting in fights.
It's stupid. Getting in fights is stupid.
We all either talk about it or you discuss it or you have these weird moments where you're like, that guy, fucking guy, looking at me. I'm like, and then you'd be like, you don't even know. And the other thing,
hello, is, sir, have a good day.
If you punch somebody, your hand is gonna hurt so bad. People forget the hand part. That's the one thing I always respect when movies or TV shows show the guy punch. Yeah, you know, like The Rock and Vin Diesel and Fast and Furious are just throwing each other through, you know, concrete walls and hotel rooms and Hummers and stuff. And you're like, you know, that, I mean, that would really hurt, no matter how strong you are. All of those things would hurt a lot. Punching a concrete wall. Like, if you punch your hotel room wall right now, break your hand.
Yeah,
your hand would be broken.
Yeah.
All right. Well, enough fighting. Now you can get to questions.
Steve.
CBF baby?
No. Steve Caimano asked, after the experience at the BMW charity event, would you be in favor of an actual tour event that limited the number of clubs to 9 or 10? I would. But I was going to ask you, I feel like this would be big on the announcers to bring up the importance of each club. Not so much on, I mean, maybe the scores would be higher, but I don't know how to raise the interest level. I think it would be cool for us, but it would need to be presented. Would you say that would be kind of a bigger
It would need
issue?
To be. I think you had 7, right? Wouldn't that you played?
Yeah,
it was
seven,
the Chick Evans thing with 7 clubs. I would say you need, if you were going to ever do this, you would need less over more. I mean, I think you need like 5. Because to me, like even you guys playing with 7 for 9 holes, you never had to hit a shot that was just wildly uncomfortable. You know, you weren't punching a 7-iron from 100 yards. You didn't have to hit eight iron out of a greenside bunker. You know, those are the things that I think would, you know, it would instantaneously pique our interest as golf fans. If like you had 5 clubs, so let's say you had 3 wood, 5-iron, 7-iron, sand wedge, putter. You know, you're going to have a couple of times where you're having hit a 7-iron from 120 yards. And I mean, to me, that's cool, right? That would be fun. You would have to pick the right golf course. I mentioned Trinity Forest earlier, actually. That would be a good golf course for this because you could run golf shots up, right? I mean, you would not need a lot of water. You're not going to go play Doral for an event like this. But if you went and played a place where golfers could be creative, to me, I think that would actually be cool to watch the separation and the guys that would embrace the format.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think that'd be cool. I have a good one here from Jesse Pibburn. I got this question a lot, so I'm only going to do, they asked favorite on-course beverage and snack, but I mean that I don't, it depends the day. But the question I got a lot from other people too is, during your casual round at home, what's your favorite like money game? And, I'll say this, for pretty much every pro that I know, my favorite game to play is just match play. Like, keep it simple. I'll tell you what my least favorite game is, and it's Wolf. When we play with, you know, the guys we're giving strokes to, we'll always play with you. Oh, what's your favorite game? Oh, I love, you know, the Scotch game. Like, I love this game. I when I go to play, I want it to just see who was the best player.
Yeah.
That's the best system is best ball if it's 2-man or just straight up match play. So I'm probably a bad person to ask money game wise. I was going to ask you because I hate Wolf. I've won the or been the low man in Wolf a handful of times and been the biggest loser at the same time. And it's the worst game to me. And there's other games just like it. So I keep it as simple as possible. I think most pros do. Curious if you had a favorite or even a least favorite, but that's how I look at it. I just want to play golf.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think one thing about joining a country club is you're introduced to about 15 new games you've never heard of before. There's a game called Vegas that they play at Phoenix a lot. I still don't know how to play it. All I know is I was playing a couple of buddies one time and a guy made a 10 on the third hole and they lost $117 on that hole.
Yeah.
And I was like, and this seems like Vegas, I guess, because I lose that quickly in Vegas as well. But, you know, I'm with you. I mean, we play match play, you know, a Nassau, auto two downs. I mean, that's kind of my standard game. You know, I want to play, like you said, I want to play if I beat Ashton straight up or if Ashton beats me in match play. Typically, he also beat me in score, you know? And so, yeah. I mean, the key to match play, in my opinion, for even a professional golfer is, like, I really don't want to casually grind over really short putts. You know, like, I'm out there to have fun. I'm trying not to grind. It's like, if you're in for four and I have a 2.5-footer for five, like, I want to pick it up. Like, I don't want to have to grind. Like, you have to do that all the time.
You're the anti-sandbagger. Because some people love putting it and then missing it casually and then making a six.
Yeah, I mean, but it's like, it's not even about making or missing it. It's more just the amount of mental capacity that goes into that moment. Like, I'm out here to have fun. You know, like, that's the one thing about golf that I do think when you talk about serious golfers, like the real serious guys, the guys that buy all the new clubs and they're obsessed with golf and they're obsessed with games and they want to go play all the top 100 golf courses, is they're also obsessed with their score everywhere. And that is the big difference when you go across the pond to somewhere like Scotland and everybody there is just out there to have a good time when they play. And it's not necessarily, what did I shoot on this golf course on this day? I mean, you know, when I was at Bannon last time, I've been to Bannon, I don't know if you know that or not, but, you know, when I was at Bannon last time, the last round we played at Bannon Trails, you know, it's blowing like 40 miles an hour. And, you know, I've got buddies that are grinding. I'm like, you know, we've played six rounds in 3 days. Like, this grinding isn't fun. Like, hitting the shots in this is fun to me, but, like, I don't want to grind for a number right
now.
You know, I'm trying to enjoy myself.
My suggestion for the players, the listeners out there who are trying to get, you know, significantly better and play professional golf or whatever, always got to play two down autos because it keeps you in it. Because even if you're getting drummed, you're going to have at some point on the front or back, you're going to have a important putter or whatever. And the game I like, even though it's a nightmare to keep track of, I only really do it with one of my friends, is one down autos. So anytime somebody wins a hole, you add a zero and it is exhausting. But that's what toughens you up, because those last six holes, not that the first 12 didn't matter, but those last six, you know, put a little hair on your chest. So it's a scary, scary game.
Yeah. Like to follow up on that question with you, just because I do think something I struggle sometimes with is, like, the difference in playing a regular round of golf versus a tournament round are massive, right? There's a huge gap between, you know, you're putting everything out, everything matters, versus, you know, a casual round of golf with your friends. What would you say if I'm out casually playing, how can I, quote unquote, toughen myself up to be better at the massively important tournament rounds of golf?
Yeah, it would be that. It's just adding that competitive thing. I mean, I notice it with most people I play with, but, you know, you're two over through five or two down through four, and it becomes very quickly, I was just out here to have fun anyways. And it's like, okay.
You don't want to lose. Like, I don't want to lose.
I don't buy that you wouldn't say you would have been grinding if you were two under through four. So it would be holding yourself accountable to that too.
And I like that.
Even like if I'm playing with my friends who I want my friends to have the best time, if I'm four up through nine and they're having a bad day and they're being kind of like, you know, grumpy and whatever, I'm going to beat them eight up. Like, it's like your goal, because my goal in golf is to be the best I can be. I'm going to look at them and be like, all right, well, if you want to go there, this is better for, you know, I'm going to then toughen myself up to learn how to just like, keeps you in your own world, your own one shot at a time. It doesn't matter if I'm going to push myself. It's what Tiger obviously did at majors for so long. It's like, I don't care what you guys are doing. I'm going to pedal to the metal. That's why I like one downs, because I think one downs keeps everyone in it so hard. And even if you played really well in the beginning, you're still going to have some sort of stress on the back. You need to learn how to make, you know, six footers, to tie or win holes under some kind of pressure, whether that pressure to you is losing to a friend that you don't like to lose to, or if it's actually the money, like that you have to find what drives you, but making those putts, hitting those shots, you know, and also what I've been trying to incorporate a little bit is from what I learned in The Last Dance is it takes a real tough person to talk trash when they're all square and not up two or three, you know, like be down two and start yapping a little bit. I think that makes you grow up just a little bit there. So I think, but see, it's just so tough. It goes back to what I always say is I don't have a hobby in golf and it sucks. But every time I go to the golf course, and same with every pro, I'm doing something to get better. And I have to find what that is. And that's difficult when you play fun days of golf sometimes, because it's just not as fun because you hit a couple bad shots or even if you hit a few good ones, you're like, okay, what I do there? You're trying to like assess it, which sucks. But I mean, you make it fun in your head because it's always a challenge. I mean, that's why I love doing what I do, is because the process is super fun. And that's part of the process. Shane, I know you need to go, and I got this great question from Hunter Freeman.
Actually, I'm not in a massive hurry now, so we're good.
Oh, cool. Okay. Either way, I'll ask this question. Hunter Freeman asked, what do we call it if you win all six majors next year? And I have a pretty good answer to this. Ooh. Instead of the Grand Slam, the Grandest Slam.
I like that a lot.
It's not bad.
The Grandest Slam.
Yeah, because it'll go on forever. They'll look back and be like, you guys remember that Tiger Slam? Oh, you remember the Grandest Slam when Max Homa did it and Shane caddied all six tournaments?
Wow, Joe got fired out of the Grandest Slam. Sorry, Joe.
I win six majors, I think we are obviously in fantasy.
Yeah, that's already exactly right. We win all six. We're going to take a quick break and be right back. Hey, listen, this is a sidebar, and people don't know this. I'm broadcasting the international feed at the U.S. Open.
So nice.
I'm going to be at Winged Foot. So we'll be able to do a Winged Foot podcast.
Who are you working that through?
The USGA. So it's basically all the countries that don't have a broadcasting partner. So, you know, NBC would be the broadcasting partner for the United States. Sky Sports would be the broadcast partner for the UK. All those other countries, if you happen to be in another country, guess what? If you're in New Zealand, you're listening to my ass broadcast the U.S. Open. So, A.
Canada, maybe?
Canada? I think you get it in Canada.
Because Canadian bacon and your kind of beef with the Canadians, I feel like we could finally bridge the...
You know what? Now, Dillette and I are good. Dillette unblocked me, so we're good. Graham actually responded to a tweet the other day. I think we're boys. He even responded that one time and said, I realized why I blocked you. I said something and he didn't like it, which I appreciated. But Yeah, I'll have to ask Sarzan. I'll have to ask somebody up there north of the border and see if they're going to get me, or if they get Dan Hicks, who knows. But I'm going to be at Wingfoot. I was thinking about this. Somebody asked me, a friend of mine texted me, was asking me, you know, favorites, players to like at Wingfoot. You know, I feel like this is a golf course that's going to set up well for Morikawa. I know you'd probably know more about this, and we'll dive more into
what
this.
What course does?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, every one of them does. But, like, when you look at a golf course and you look at players, you personally, like when you go play Wingfoot for the first time on Monday or Tuesday or whatever it's going to be next week, do you think to yourself as a professional golfer, man, this course sets up well for X, Y, and Z? Do you ever think that? I mean, do those names ever pop in your head like that? Or is it more you're so focused on what you're doing, you don't ever think about like the world like that?
We've had certain weeks. It really has to stand out, because I'm in the camp that if you're John Rahm, like there's someone with the most complete game possible, they all set up well. But we have played certain courses there's very few people with an extremely predominant and dominant shot shape. The one that always comes up is Rory's draw, which is not a super common thing off the tee anymore to hit that high draw. It's a very scary spot to be, a little bit under, a little bit stuck all the time, you know, hit these high. The miss is big for most everybody, but Rory. And when we went to Medina last year, you know, Joe was like, man, this place really sets up well for Rory. And you start to see it's a ton of dogleg lefts where carrying, you know, a certain bunker would fit. But you could typically see, instead of maybe just one name, you would see like this really is an advantage for the Bombers, because the fairway bunkers carries 300. If you can fly at 300, the fairway actually becomes bigger. But U.S. Open, I already know Wingfoot doesn't have that thing. So Wingfoot is going to be as much as, you know, we can get into the cracks and say, oh, you know, the straightest, most accurate guy is going to have an advantage. And sure, but I believe that when a course is that hard, like Olympia Fields was, it's just the most complete player. You're going to have to do everything well. You're going to have, you know, times when you don't drive it super straight. You're going to have times when you don't hit your iron super, you know, you're going to have to chip it well. You're going to have to do everything well. And that is why we like hard. And that's why, you know, it, to your question, you would go there and be not so obviously like, oh, this so suits Rory or Dustin or Rom. You would be like, you know, this is a big dog golf course. Whoever wins this is going to earn it. I think that's maybe more what you would see.
Yeah, somebody texted me yesterday and said they played the West course 2 days in a row and said, I don't know, there's not many guarantees in life. I can guarantee you nobody's going to finish under par.
Yeah, Tiger said five over is going
to
win.
Well, that's crazy.
Yeah, it seems I'm like excited to see that.
Oh, it's going to be awesome. I had a couple of more.
Yeah, I got two more.
I have a great question from Drew Redman.
All right.
Why are we seeing an increased use of stand bags on tour? Seems like they're popping up more and more. And you see this is a trend that will continue on. And maybe we'll one day get to the death of the staff bag.
Don't have an exact answer. Ricky Fowler is a big part of it. He did it at the Waste Management.
He's kind of the reason,
years
right?
ago. Yeah, he's a big needle of this. Also, a lot of people's wives have been caddying or friends. Fair. So I think the players have been asking for a stand instead. I would be hard-pressed to say the staff bag is going to go away. Even a lot of caddies like the staff bag better. You can fit a lot more stuff in there. I mean, when it rained in Phoenix and we had our stand bag because they were doing like a promotional thing, we couldn't fit our rain gear and all that in it. So it actually becomes a pain and the caddies know it. So we have that kind of, you know, thought process when it goes to it. But you never know. Also, the sponsorship money you make from the belly of a staff bag is typically a driving factor. So I would be surprised to see it go away.
The belly being the framed part with your name on it, your club frame, and all that stuff, right? Yep.
I got a question here from David B. Evans. I got to do one or two more, then I got to go taste wine because that's what you do up here.
Yeah.
When will free drops be given for landing in a divot? In my opinion, the previous player altered the course. All players are supposed to play the same conditions. I used to think that, so I'm not saying you know you're wrong here, but that's the I don't know. We're too focused on fair, as we've talked about on this podcast. I want it to be like that's art. Like that's art. Yeah, every other sport has variables. Why don't we have a variable? If we didn't, we should just play off a hitting bay and we're using a TrackMan in some sort of simulator because that would be the only true fairway. Because I can get a wind gust that you didn't have, and that's unfair. I can hit your spike mark. That's not fair. I mean, all these things could be perceived as unfair. But
I mean, like you know what, dude? I'm absolutely 1000% with you on this. I used to think a little bit like that. You know, I mean, this is a bummer if you hit it in a divot. You know what? I think Paul Azinger is the guy that always said this. He always would say there's two types of people. There's a guy that walks up, sees his ball in a divot and goes, shit, what bad luck. And then there's a guy that walks up, sees his ball in a divot and goes, I'm going to show off.
Yeah,
you know? And I mean,
for sure.
It really is about the way you perceive it. And you know, I mean, what, Payne Stewart hit it in a divot at Pinehurst and he's like, I'll figure out a way, right? And he did.
I said this the other day. I asked somebody else, a tour pro, I can't remember who, about the divot thing. Hey, like I would wonder, and I guess you would never know, but I wonder if I've played from more divots or people have hit it in my divot more.
Ah, interesting.
So, yeah, I would be curious. I mean, I would assume it would be people have played out of my divot more, but still like kind of maybe puts a little more positivity perspective in being like, listen, you've screwed over more people than you've been, you know, so it's all good.
Out of a divot now, get a little T, you just write a M after, and then you always be able to know. That's mine.
Too scared.
When you were in that divot on 14, did it have an M that written in there with a 10? That was me. That was mine.
Listen, I just realized my last question you had already, it was the scheduling one. So I have no more. Do you have any more?
I have no more.
I have two. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say a couple things. One is, this week I started doing the digital minimalism thing. I've been reading that report book. And, so no social media, just basically no kind of BS portions of the phone. Unbelievable. I've like on day 5 or 6 of it, it has been refreshing, a lot more reading, and it's kind of, don't just sit around and do nothing is kind of the idea behind it. Love it. So that's been exciting and fun. It is really weird jumping into, like today I had to jump into Twitter this morning and, you know, you forget that there's a whole world going on that you're not a part of all of a sudden. Yeah. Second thing is we have a store. People ask about merch a lot. We've got a store. I think it's launching this week, Max, on Imperial. Our friends at Imperial have put together a collection of hats and t-shirts, maybe a hashtag golf t-shirt that possibly you can purchase. But the stuff's great. Obviously, if I know you own Imperial hats, everybody does. So that should be launching either this week or next. When it does, we'll obviously tweet out the link on social media, and you can go out there and buy hats, and I don't have to mail hats anymore, which is exciting for me as well, because I'm horrible at mailing, and I forget, and it takes months and months before I get them to people. So I don't have to have that responsibility on my shoulders anymore.
That's exciting. I'm excited for you. I'm happy for you. I have two quick flights. Feel Good Friday. Got to play with Sophia Popov at her home course. Walking up 18, there was a surprise for her. They presented her the British Open trophy, and a bunch of the members were waiting on the green, gave her, you know, kind of a round of applause walking up to the green that she didn't get to have, considering there was no fans.
Nice.
At the major she won. So it was very
Fire
cool
Rock.
To be
is that
Fire
what it was?
Rock. So it was
yeah.
Very
how
cool
is,
to be
how
a part
is Fire Rock?
It was hot that day. So the fire, really came into
nice.
Play.
Nice.
But it was good. You know, it was fun. It was a really fun day. And then best shot I saw someone hit this week. One of the few things I don't mind watching 1,000 times, Bill Haas is shot out of the water to keep the FedEx Cup going. Will forever just still be, I don't know if I can watch enough times to be like, to dumb it down enough. Like that is pressure plus actual skill plus the guess, like all of it. I can't leave it spin. So I know everybody's seen it 10,000 times. I could watch it 10,000 times.
Well. Oh, it checks so fast. I feel like you forget how fast it grabbed, you know?
Yeah, it's got a lot of cheese.
One of the best recovery golf shots in the history of the sport, no matter what event it was. I don't have many flights. I didn't make an American this week again. Second American of 2020.
Congrats. That's pretty amazing.
To close the round, I think you're the only person I texted a picture of it to.
Yeah,
but
pretty sick.
I was playing with Ashton, who I think I'd played with when we did it the first time at Papago. It wasn't back-to-back par fives, but he said it almost went in for a hole-out eagle on 17, and I hit hybrid on 18, and he said he thinks it almost went in for double eagle. So then, of course, the conversation changes to what do we call this?
Yeah.
And
let's
so
address that when we get there.
any suggestions out there for eagle, double eagle, we will happily take if you send it our way. That's that. I mean, not much else I've got. Like I said, we are pro FedEx Cup here. We just are hoping that whatever our ideas can do to improve that championship, you know, at least somebody is listening, and maybe we'll take a note or two. And we're just a couple idiots trying to have a good time. Wine tasting today, Max?
Wine tasting today.
What is your wine? What's your go-to red wine?
Like brand?
No, like type.
Oh, I like Cab. Cabernet Sauvignon.
Oh,
that's my favorite.
Bro.
Yeah.
Put hair on your chest. You can't be going, what do you want? You don't want Syrah.
I found out I liked Cab Franc yesterday, so
there you go.
Yeah.
And then you're no golf. When do you get back into mode to get ready
Thursday.
For this Open?
Thursday, okay. Leaving Saturday for the U.S. Open, so get there a little early. Get in
nice.
The full mode.
Yeah, you'll be there. You'll be there before me. I think I've got a tournament this weekend. Ashton and I are playing a two-man tournament.
Oh yeah,
in Los
good
Angeles.
Luck.
So
let's
so
see
playing
a
that
number.
And then, yeah, I'm excited about it. And then we'll then I'll be at Wingfoot, and so we'll
all
be
right.
doing a live Wingfoot podcast. I don't know what day, but that'll be exciting.
Very cool.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Rate and review the show if you don't mind. We'll be back with like some real U.S. Open golf stuff next week, which is going to be very exciting. I can't believe the U.S. Open is coming up. That's so wild to say. Appreciate you listening. We'll see you next week.
Yeah, wash your hands. Enjoy, you know. PGA Tour season's right around the corner. See ya.
Here we are. Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.